Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and welcome to the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. This is a space for down-to-earth, honest conversations about what's really going on in your body in your 40s and how to support yourself through it. If you're feeling a bit out of sync, overwhelmed, or just not quite like yourself, you're in the right place. So let's get into today's episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. So today I want to talk about something that I know can have a huge impact on women's quality of life during perimenopause and menopause, and that is hot flushes and night sweats. So this episode actually came from a question that was submitted by someone in my email community who asked if I could talk about the supplements specifically for hot flushes. And we will absolutely talk about supplements, but before we get there, I really wanted to zoom out and look at the bigger picture first. Because one of the biggest misconceptions around hot flushes and night sweats is that they're purely hormonal and purely caused by low estrogen. Now, hormonal changes absolutely play a major role. Changes in estrogen, the fluctuating nature of it, its decline later on, of course it plays a role. But the picture is actually much more complex and interesting than a lot of women realize. And this can explain as well why a lot of women in the early stages of perimenopause, let's say 40, 41, 42, 43, who might start to notice hot flushes or night sweats, and they think, why on earth have I got hot flushes when I'm so young? And, you know, I thought hot flushes were associated only with a decline in estrogen close to menopause. And surely that's years away. So what I'm going to explain will hopefully help you understand why hot flushes can be starting to occur very early ages, stages of perimenopause as well. It's not just about waiting until we get to menopause or just before for us to start experiencing those symptoms. So hot flushes are also what we call vasomotor symptoms, which means that they involve the nervous system, the blood vessels, temperature regulation, cardiovascular function, stress physiology, and metabolic health. All of these things are involved in the production, is it the right word? Production of hot flushes or night sweats in these vasomotor symptoms. And understanding this really matters because it helps explain why lifestyle factors can have such a big impact on symptoms for a lot of women over and above supplements. Now, before I go any further, I also want to say this. If you're experiencing severe or very disruptive hot flushes and or night sweats, this is not me suggesting that you're somehow causing them or doing things wrong during perimenopause and, you know, therefore you're having these symptoms. Not at all. Some women are simply more affected than others. Hormones matter enormously. But alongside hormones, there's often additional contributing factors that can either worsen symptoms or help support the body through them. And that's the piece that I really want women to understand better, to know. So let's start with what actually is happening during a hot flush. So one of estrogen's roles inside the body is helping to regulate the hypothalamus, which acts a bit like the body's thermostat. The hypothalamus is in the brain. And that's, yeah, so your body's sort of thermostat, your temperature control unit. And as estradiol begins fluctuating and declining through perimenopause, the brain becomes more sensitive to even very small changes in temperature. And before, just to go back on that, so I said as estradiol begins fluctuating and declining, this can be happening before it's declining generally. So if you've listened to my podcast for a long time, you'll already understand, hopefully, the physiology. But what's happening as we move into perimenopause is that estrogen starts to go on a roller coaster ride. It's now fluctuating erratically, very high one minute, sharp drop the next, very high the next. But our overall levels of estrogen, estradiol, can still be very normal, healthy range. But it's the fluctuating nature of it that can bring about the hot flush, the night sweats. For example, at the dip, you know, the drop of the roller coaster, we'll have a very low level of estrogen in that moment, in that time, and that can bring about this change in the body's thermostat, and therefore we get this hot flush. So it isn't necessarily involved in just, it's not just as a result of having low estrogen levels overall. The later stages of perimenopause is when most women do start to know to have low levels overall of estrogen. Before then, they may have very normal, even higher than ever before levels, but it's that fluctuating nature that's bringing these changes. So the body's comfortable temperature zone can start to narrow when we see that fluctuation of estrogen erratically and or its decline later on. So something that previously wouldn't have triggered any response at all in the body can suddenly trigger a surge of heat, a flushing, a sweating, it could be a flush in the face, it could be a sweat all over, increased heart rate, sometimes anxiety or palpitations. If you ever notice this random out of nowhere palpitation, this strong beat in your chest and you think, what is that? That's very much related to this whole set of vasomotor symptoms. So your blood vessels dilate very rapidly to release heat, and sweating increases as the body then tries to cool itself down. And this is why hot flushes can sometimes seem to come out of nowhere, because the nervous system, blood sugar regulation, your stress hormones, hydration status, your alcohol intake, sleep quality, your cardiovascular health can all influence how reactive this whole vasomotor system becomes. So while hormones could light the match, these other factors absolutely add fuel to the fire and sort of determine whether or not, you know, we'll actually have a hot flush, how intense it will be, how frequent it will be. One of the biggest factors I see in my practice is blood sugar instability that's causing an issue. So blood sugar crashes place stress on the body generally, as it's a physiological stressor when we have blood sugar highs and lows. And when blood glucose drops too quickly, the body releases stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol to bring blood sugar back up again. And adrenaline in particular can trigger or worsen hot flushes and night sweats. So this is why a lot of women notice symptoms are worse in the late afternoon, maybe after a blood sugar crash, during the night when they may have a blood sugar crash, after skipping meals, after high sugar foods, after drinking alcohol, or when they're relying on caffeine and running on empty. And I think so many women in their 40s, 50s are unintentionally, so really I know this is by accident for many women, underfueling themselves. They're stressed, they're busy, they're overwhelmed, grabbing coffee instead of breakfast, skipping breakfast, waiting until 11, 12 o'clock to eat anything, rushing through their lunch, eating irregularly, maybe skipping dinner. And the body feels that physiological stress very strongly. So balancing blood sugar can make a surprisingly significant difference for a lot of women. So that means eating regular meals, balanced meals where there's plenty of protein, there's some healthy fats, there's plenty of fiber, different vegetables, and there's some complex, slow-release carbohydrate, fiber-rich carbohydrate on that plate. Not relying on caffeine to carry you through the day and avoiding the big peaks and crashes that can dysregulate the nervous system even further. So just adding 25, at least 30 grams ideally of protein to every meal and eating breakfast within an hour of waking up in the morning and then having your lunch for 4 or so hours later, three to 4 to 5 hours later, and then dinner, again, equal amount of gap in between, or maybe you have a small snack between lunch and dinner to bridge the longer gap, which is very common. That's what definitely I do. About 4 o'clock, I have a protein snack. That is how we can regulate our blood sugar levels much better across the day and avoid these big peaks and crashes. They only add further dysregulation and pressure to a nervous system that's already feeling quite under pressure with the erratic nature of estrogen, the decline in progesterone, the changes in cortisol that are happening naturally as a result of that, and all the other things that we are dealing with, you know, that our life load brings us. Stress Which brings me on to the fact that stress is another huge piece of the puzzle. And honestly, I don't think we can talk about perimenopause properly without talking about stress and nervous system load. I see clients all the time in practice who are very surprised that we spend so much time talking about non-food related stuff. They're like, oh, I thought, you know, you would only talk about nutrition. And it's like, no, you cannot help somebody through perimenopause without talking about that stress and nervous system piece, the emotional health, the mental load. Because a lot of women are navigating one of the busiest, most demanding periods of their life at the exact same time that hormones are becoming more volatile. So, you know, here we are at me, for example, 46 and a half, nearly. When these symptoms hit us, for me, my first set of symptoms started around 42. They came, they went, they came, they went, they evolved. They've now evolved into something completely new in the last sort of 6 months or so, particularly cognitively for me, and stress resilience getting really low. And that's coming at a time when you're at the peak of your career. You know, you've got so many responsibilities. You may have teenage kids, you may have younger kids, you may have anything in between, you may have aging parents that you need to care for or worry about. You may have relationship pressures, poor sleep, mental load, more emotional labor, and the nervous system is already carrying a lot at this stage of life. And then we add to that perimenopause, and chronic stress changes the body. It increases cortisol, adrenaline, it sensitizes the nervous system, makes it more sensitive, we're decreasing our stress tolerance, it affects our sleep, it impacts our blood sugar regulation, and it can absolutely influence these vasomotor symptoms, how likely we are to have a hot flush, a night sweat, the intensity of it, how frequent they are more likely to be. And as I said, this isn't to say we're doing something wrong if we have them more often than the next person. It's just to help you understand that there's so much more going on than simply a decline in estrogen that can bring about a hot flush. So a lot of women notice that their hot flushes worsen during periods of overwhelm, you know, significant periods of stress, moving house, divorcing, something big at work, something huge can, you know, when we're under more stress, under more pressure or overwhelm, that's when we can start to notice these symptoms either coming for the first time or getting worse. I certainly notice, and I know many women are the same, when I'm very stressed or I've had a particularly bigger day, maybe it's a great day, but it's been a lot, you know, a lot of clients, a lot of write-ups to do, a lot of things to juggle in that day, that my cheeks get flushed. I definitely have all the sort of vasomotor symptoms that day versus a weekend when I'm completely chilled and I'm not thinking about work. I'm not thinking about anything other than what I'm doing from this minute. Maybe I'll go here, maybe I'll do that, maybe I'll read a book, or on holiday or something like that. I don't have a hot flush. And lots of women report that. A lot of women notice their hot flushes worsen when they're anxious, when they're just rushing constantly, when they never truly switch off. And I think this is why nervous system support matters so much in midlife. And it is a huge, if not one of the biggest pieces here. Not in a fluffy wellness way that we, you know, we hear so much online about nervous system support. It's in a genuine, I'm talking about this in a very genuine physiological way. We cannot get away from it, and it does need to be addressed. So things like slowing down where possible, where can we pull back? How can we say, actually, I don't need to do this right now, I'll do this tomorrow. And this is me talking to myself, because I am a chronic, I'm that person that does more than they need to do, just because I think, well, I should or I can. So really trying to pull back on that. Where can we slow down? Where can we get more daily movement in? Very gentle walks in nature, just moving more in a gentle way. Where can you try to build something like Qigong? Very, even just 10 minutes, learning it on YouTube, practicing something, following something on YouTube. Tai Chi, Qigong, gentle yoga, yin yoga. Where can we do more breathing practices in our day? Just the simple 4-6 breathing ratio is so easy, so simple. We can do it anywhere. How can we weave 3 to 5 minutes of that in a few times a day? Where can we be more mindful? Can we go for walks where we might usually go for a walk and have a call with somebody or listen to something? Can we just leave our phone or just not get it out of our bag and just walk and just be mindful and take in what we see and what we hear? And think about nothing other than that thing, that one thing you are looking at in that moment. spending more time outside, creating moments of safety and calm for the body throughout the day. And that's what all of these things that I just mentioned can do. Lying down in Shavasana for 5 minutes, lying down on the floor with your legs up the wall for 5 minutes has been shown to be really calming for the nervous system. All of these things and lots of other things as well can genuinely help regulate the stress response over time. Something I find really helpful at home where I work from home, I have my yoga mat laid out by my desk, and in between meetings or calls, I'll just lay down for 2 to 3 to 5 minutes, however long I can, and just feel my belly rising and falling as I breathe in and out through my, with my mouth closed. And when I get back up to carry on, I feel so much better even after just a couple of minutes. And also, the days that I don't weave that in through my day, I finish the day feeling quite frazzled, flushy. The cheeks go. By dinner time, I'm just flushed. Versus the days when I do weave it in, I don't finish the day like that. It makes a huge difference. Alcohol is another really common trigger as well, unfortunately. Again, this isn't about perfection or telling anyone that they should not enjoy their glass of wine anymore. Not at all. It's just understanding that alcohol can dilate blood vessels. It can disrupt blood sugar. It can worsen sleep quality. It can increase dehydration, and it can affect our histamine responses. All of these things can amplify hot flushes and night sweats for a lot of women. So just being mindful of that can make a big difference. A lot of women notice it themselves when they wake up, especially at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. drenched in sweat after having alcohol the evening before. So, you know, these are things that I'm sure I don't even need to tell you, you've already joined the dots. And so, again, it's just having that knowledge, understanding and empowerment and saying, well, is this drink worth it? If it is, go for it, you know, by all means. But if you would rather not have these wake ups in the middle of the night, this increase in hot flushes, then you may decide to differently. Hydration matters as well. Hot flushes and sweating increase fluid and electrolyte losses. So do make sure that, you know, you are always hydrated. Many women are already mildly dehydrated without realizing it. You know, if you're not gently sort of gradually sipping water throughout the day, then you're probably mildly dehydrated. It's great to start the day with a biggish glass of water, maybe with fresh lemon juice, and then gradually sip it across the day. Even mild dehydration can affect temperature regulation and place additional stress on the body. So just simple things like drinking enough water consistently, like I said, drip feeding it throughout the day, supporting electrolytes where needed, maybe even just a pinch of sea salt if you're not somebody who's prone to high blood pressure, or including potassium-rich foods, sodium-rich foods, not the regular table salty kind of processed foods, just naturally electrolyte rich foods. Things like celery and coconut water can be very helpful. Reducing excessive caffeine. So if you enjoy a cup of coffee in the morning, continue to enjoy that cup of coffee in the morning. But if you're that person who's relying on 3, 4, 5 cups to get you through the morning, to get you through the day, that is an excessive amount. And obviously it's a reliance for you as opposed to something that you're just enjoying and may have health benefits. It's kind of gone beyond that. So considering that, because that's been shown, excessive caffeine intake has definitely been shown to increase vasomotor symptoms. And of course, replenishing those fluids after sweating, as I said, you know, whether that's exercise, whether you are having lots of hot flushes, just understanding that you need to hydrate. All of that can support the body better. And this is why I always come back to foundations first, because where this person in the email community asked me specifically about supplements, because while supplements can absolutely be supportive for some women, they tend to work best when the underlying foundations are being addressed as well, or, you know, ideally first. And then the supplements can be, for some women, the sort of cherry on top, just to give them that extra bit of support. They're not usually replacing the need to look at sleep, stress, blood sugar, nervous system support, movement, alcohol intake, hydration, and, you know, overall health status. We can't just put a plaster on all of those things by way of a supplement that's been shown to be helpful for hot flushes. Yes, they can help, of course, but these foundations have to be in place as well. So now let's talk about supplements, because that was the question that I was originally asked. And there are a few that have some evidence behind them. One of the most commonly discussed is black cohosh. The research overall is a bit mixed. Some women do find it helpful for reducing a hot flush, the frequency and the severity. Black cohosh isn't suitable for everyone, and quality definitely matters enormously with supplements like this. You know, don't just go and get something that's really cheap off the shelf in the supermarket or a high street shop. Really important with black cohosh, particularly because there's been concerns around liver safety in some cases. So you do get what you pay for. Make sure you're using a very reputable sort of herb brand. So I always think it's important that women speak to a qualified practitioner if they're unsure, like myself or a herbalist even, just somebody who is qualified and will understand, especially if they have underlying health conditions or they're taking medication. You will always want to check that it's safe to use whatever herbs or nutrients that you might want to be taking alongside any medication you have in case there's any negative interaction. And that goes for everything I'm talking about today. Sage is another herb that's traditionally been used for excessive sweating and hot flushes. Some women find sage tea or sage supplements really helpful. Sage tea would obviously be a really safe place to start. Not that sage supplements aren't safe, but you know, you could just start with some sage tea and see how you get on with that. But sage tea have been found to be helpful, particularly for milder vasomotor symptoms. Again, it's not a miracle cure, but it can be supportive for some people. Red clover, often discussed as well. It contains what's known as phytoestrogens. That's plant compounds that can weakly interact with estrogen receptors in the body. It doesn't reduce our estrogen, it doesn't increase our estrogen, you know, nothing's going to do that other than the hormone itself. But they have been shown to kind of weakly interact with the receptors and kind of have this nice balancing effect overall. So the evidence with phytoestrogens is fairly modest overall, but some women notice improvements in symptoms with them. I've definitely found that in practice with clients. And it's important to understand that phytoestrogens are not equivalent to hormone replacement therapy, as I said. It's not the same thing. Some people I have heard talk about it in that way, and it's just not the same thing at all. Another supplement that's getting more attention now is ERR731. So this is a trademark substance, which is basically a standardized Siberian rhubarb extract. So certain brands, you know, supplement brands can use this. They can sort of pay to use this particular trademarked product. So you would see it on the back of the label. So for example, the brand Metagenics have a product called, gosh, I can't remember the name of the product, but they have this estrogen, it stands for estrogen receptor beta 731 trademark in it, this Siberian rhubarb extract. And this one actually has some fairly promising evidence behind it. It includes 6 clinical trials that show improvements in hot flushes, night sweats, and anxiety within 1 to 4 weeks of using it. And it targets the estrogen receptor beta without hormones, obviously, to gently support estrogen balance. And it does appear to be well tolerated for many women as well. But again, though, not every supplement works for every woman. And if you are, you know, concerned in any way about any kind of estrogen, you know, receptor products that work on the estrogen receptor, then do make sure you speak to your practitioner, your doctor before you use them. And just to say, you know, as I said, there's rarely one magic pill. The body is always much more complex than that. You know, if we've got low iron or low B12 and we supplement with B12 or iron, then that is going to be very helpful. And for the most part, most people will feel that, you know, after a while of taking those things and having those levels replenished, they will feel the benefits of it. But in this case, there is always so much more, you know, the body is just more complex. For some women, body identical hormone therapy is absolutely the most effective support for vasomotor symptoms. For others, lifestyle support plus targeted supplementation as well makes a meaningful difference. Usually, body identical hormone therapy, as I've said in previous episodes, it's number one, not just the therapy itself, it's about the body, the woman, the female body that it's going into, making sure that body is efficiently able to break it down, utilize it, metabolize it, and so on. And also whether or not somebody is using HRT, lifestyle, nutrition always matters as well. It's not just one or the other. And, you know, and like I say, for many women, it is a combination approach. And I think the most important thing I want women to take away from this episode is that hot flushes, they're not random. Your body's responding to hormonal, neurological, vascular, metabolic, and stress-related inputs all at the same time. And while we can't always eliminate symptoms completely, there's usually a lot, very often, a lot that we can do to help support the body more effectively. You don't just have to put up with it. And equally, you don't need to feel overwhelmed by trying to optimize absolutely everything at once either. I really hope that that's not what you've taken from this. So usually the most meaningful changes come from consistently supporting the foundations, nourishing your body properly, 3 square meals each day, protein, healthy fats, fiber, quality carbohydrate. Eat within an hour of waking. Make sure you have about 30 grams of protein with your first meal and all the others. Regulating your stress where possible. Where can you take 5 minutes? Where can you take 3 minutes? Lie down, legs up the wall, do some breathing, go for a walk in nature. Where can you get outside more? Can you get natural daylight first thing in the morning where possible? Can you, which will then improve your sleep, which I was going to say, can you improve your sleep? I've got plenty of other episodes as well, talking specifically about sleep and nighttime routines and things like that, that are very helpful. So have a look for those. Do contact me if you want me to send you the link to any of them. Move regularly, you know, every hour, stand up, walk around. It doesn't have to be anything intense. If you're not at a gym, you don't need to start joining a gym necessarily, but move more. Dance, whatever it is that can get you moving more. Support your blood sugar, and nourishing your body properly 3 times, you know, 3 square meals a day will help with that. Stay hydrated and just create more moments of calm and safety in your day, every day, for your nervous system. These small things really do add up. And if hot flushes or night sweats are significantly affecting your quality of life, please know that you deserve support with that. I can support you, another practitioner like with myself, functional medicine practitioner, nutritional therapist, they can support you as well. You're not being dramatic. You're not failing. You're not weak. You're absolutely not supposed to be suffering in silence and doing this on your own. You deserve to be helped if this is something that you are really struggling with, or struggling with even just a little bit. So we can work together one-to-one. You can join my membership. You can just ask questions, you know, follow people like myself who may have these tips that, you know, even just take what you can from today's episode and see how you go. It may make a big difference for you. And yes, if you would like to take my quiz, my free perimenopause quiz is there for you as well. I'll link it in the show notes. And that can just, if you take that quiz, it's 36, it's a comprehensive quiz, 36 questions that it takes you through. It takes a couple of minutes and it will give you a result about what areas of your, you know, what foundational areas of your health, like whether it's blood sugar, whether it's gut health, whether it's sleep, whether it's nervous system, that you should be prioritizing right now as the most important piece for you to start working on. And then it will also give you some actionable tips and things that you can put into place straight away. So do use the quiz to your benefit. So thank you for listening and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you enjoyed this episode and you're wanting a bit more support, there's a few ways I can help you. You can take my free perimenopause quiz, join my Midlife Thrive membership, or work with me one-to-one. And I'll leave all the details in the show notes. And if this episode resonated, I'd love you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. Thank you so much for being here. It really means a lot. And I'll see you in the next episode.